ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's on the mind of the country's biggest, most influential, and most innovative business leaders? You get to find out every Friday with me, Alan Kohler, as I sit down with the people influencing the markets, the economy, and the ideas shaping our world.
The housing supply situation is completely out of whack, and if we don't act urgently about this, we will end up in a world where it doesn't matter how big the pie is and how much your slice is, you won't have anywhere to eat it.
Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcast.
Well, if there's one word to define Budget Week this week, it's probably bold. The government finally showed some boldness on tax reform and its effort to rein in the spending on the NDIS. The opposition was arguably even bolder. Angus Taylor, with his back to the wall, went for broke with his promise to index tax thresholds to inflation, slash migration and deny welfare payments to non-citizens. The competing visions set the battle lines for a furious debate that's going to run, really, for the rest of this parliamentary term. More immediately, though, we're going to be looking at how the government's changes on negative gearing and capital gains tax in particular are likely to shift the property market. Will investors start moving away from existing properties and start turning up at auctions for newly built homes? Will first home buyers finally have a better shot? And what will all of this mean for house prices and rent? I'm keen to take a closer look at what all of this means for the property market. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Well, Melinda Jennison is the President of the Real Estate Buyers Agent Association of Australia, and Matt Bowes is from the Grattan Institute. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we know negative gearing rules have been grandfathered for existing investments, so there's no need for a fire sale, I suppose, of existing investments there. But as of this week, new investments can only be negatively geared if it's a newly built property, not an established home. And, of course, the capital gains tax rules are becoming less generous as well. So, Melinda, let me start with you. What's this going to mean for auctions, as soon as this weekend and in coming weeks? What sort of immediate impact do you expect to see here?
I think that the results will be mixed, to be honest. We have already been seeing some of the auction clearance rates pull back in recent weeks as some of the information in relation to the budget has been leaked. However, I think that the overall result will be dependent on who are the buyers in specific markets around the country. So those areas which are dominated by owner-occupiers are likely to see less impact than areas that are dominated by property investors. Mm. For the foreseeable future, I definitely think we will see property investors take a sidestep. They will pause to reassess whether they divert or change their investment strategy to look at other options, or alternatively, they'll look at restructuring to consider other tax-effective ways to purchase.
And so, Melinda, just sticking with you, if what you've painted there is what we're going to see, does that mean when you talk about owner-occupied parts of the market perhaps not being immediately impacted, but where the investors are, what parts of the market are they? Just give us a sense of what parts of the market we're talking about there.
Look, I think in the affordable segment of the market, we've seen a concentration of investment activity in recent months. We've also seen first home buyers competing for the same stock since the first home buyer guarantee scheme came into effect in October last year. So I think that we will see some impact or less competition in that segment of the market.
So does that mean some of those properties coming down in price, do you think, in that part of the market?
I don't think we're going to see price retraction immediately. And in fact, I think that general statements when we're talking about Australia's property market as a whole need to be considered with caution. Australia is not a single property market.
Good
and
point.
I think the supply and demand metrics at a local level are very dependent on, the number of properties that are available for sale and the buyer depth at a specific suburb level, not even at a city or regional level.
So, Matt, do you agree with that sort of take on what we can expect to see in the immediate term as a result of these changes?
Well, I think that's entirely right, that when we look at the things that are really driving the property market over the long term, it is that balance between supply and demand. And what we're really talking about here with these tax changes is a slight shift in where that demand comes from. So we're going to see somewhat fewer investors and maybe somewhat more homeowners, but ultimately there's a lot of homeowners out there. There's a lot of demand still there. And so when you run that through the kind of models that the Treasury has used and the kind of estimates that we've done show a pretty minimal impact on prices.
So, again, the follow-up to you is the same, Matt. What does that mean for different parts of the market, established homes, apartments, different parts of the big cities? What does that look like?
Well, I think there's probably two impacts there. One is, just as we've said, you know, this is something that advantages homeowners. They get to keep their big capital gains tax exemption, which is really the biggest tax exemption that there is now in the property space, now that we've retrenched on some of these other ones. And then I think there's a second impact, which is that the types of properties that people might want to invest in might change with these capital gains tax changes. And that's because rather than trying to invest purely just to chase that really attractive capital gains tax discount, that discount's now a little bit less generous, and we might see some more investors who are looking more at how they can earn a return through the rental income of properties. That's certainly what the government seems to have intended. If you read the kind of their budget papers, they seem to be sort of supporting this idea that there'll be more investors, perhaps, who are looking at new housing supply, certainly, but also higher density housing that traditionally has seen less of those capital gains and more of that rental income.
So, Matt, does that mean more activity, more buyers, particularly investors, in the newly built at the lower end of the market?
I think it's really hard to say which part of the market that they'll come in on. And right. I think the big thing to remember here is just that the big things that are impacting the property market are really those long-term supply-demand dynamics, which aren't really changing a lot because of this policy, although there are other policies in the budget that matter there. And also what interest rates are doing. You know, that is a huge impact on how much investors are wanting to get in the market and what kinds of price appreciation we'll be likely to see.
And Matt, you mentioned that the greatest tax advantage now is the owner-occupied, you know, family home that's still going to be capital gains tax-free. Does that mean we will see more demand or interest in those established family homes, the bigger homes in the suburbs?
I don't know that this changes that dynamic so much, but I think that dynamic is still there, right? I think this, for a long time in Australian housing policy, the homeowner has kind of been the goal, the person we want to support. Certainly that's what a lot of politicians will say. I think that forgets a little bit that there are a lot of other people out there who, say, are renting and who probably are not really impacted that much either way by these kind of tax changes. But when it comes to homeowners, certainly that's the goal of this policy, and I think we will likely see slight rise in homeownership as a result.
Okay. Well, Melinda, we know Treasury in the budget have said that they're expecting about 75,000 more owner occupiers to enter the market over the decade. Very difficult to, I guess, model or forecast what's going to happen over a decade in the housing market. But do you think that number is about right, a 75,000 increase in people getting into the market?
It's really hard to predict how it's going to change owner-occupier behaviour. Owner-occupiers are always looking in specific segments of the market based on affordability. And I think one of the bigger drivers of where people are able to buy is based on, you know, how affordable a specific market is. And I guess some of the changes to negative gearing also do impact first home buyers that cannot afford to purchase in the location that they live, because ultimately some of those buyers in the past have leaned on rent vesting as a strategy, as a way to build equity temporarily. They sell out in the future, use that equity to purchase their own home in the location that they work, near family.
Has that become more popular? Because we hear that the stories of more and more younger people doing that, going with a negatively geared property to help build up for their own home deposit. Are we talking about a big number that are doing that, and has it been increasing?
In recent years, we've definitely seen a trend towards first home buyers starting with a more affordable option, especially those that live in locations that they simply cannot afford to purchase their first home within. So it's very hard, obviously, for first home buyers to build a deposit through savings alone. So they do look at other investment vehicles to fast track that wealth creation, ultimately not for any other purpose than trying to purchase their own home in the future. So that's an unfortunate consequence of some of the tax changes that have been proposed, because we're no longer going to see that as a viable option for rentvestors.
Matt, we know when it comes to supply, the Treasury, and you know, perhaps surprising for some to see this in the budget, the Treasury says these tax changes in and of themselves will lower supply by about 35,000 homes, but other measures in the budget, $2 billion for housing infrastructure and so on, will more than make up for that with more supply. But in and of themselves, the negative gearing and capital gains tax changes are going to, you know, slightly reduce supply. Do you agree with that forecast from Treasury?
Well, I think it's just being honest, frankly, about what the impact of lower prices is in the housing market. You know, when developers are looking at whether a project stacks up or whether a greenfield development stacks up, they've got to look at all of their costs, obviously, or the cost of the land, the cost of the construction materials and labour. But they're also looking at the price they can sell the home for at the end of it. And when home prices go down, that does mean that it makes some of those projects a little bit harder to stack up. And so those kinds of estimates that Treasury's put out about, say, a 35,000, I think, reduction in housing supply over a decade, that's relatively consistent with what we've previously estimated for the kind of tax changes that we recommended. And so that doesn't strike me as too surprising. I guess, as you say, the big question is these other policies in the budget, including that local infrastructure fund, can they really get at the major barrier to housing supply in our cities, which are these planning barriers, these restrictions that states put particularly on apartments and townhouses in established suburbs that have made a lot of those suburbs far too expensive for particularly first home buyers.
I want to ask you both about the impact on house prices. You've both kind of touched on this. Again, in the budget it says we won't necessarily see house prices fall, but the growth will be about 2% lower as a result of this. Melinda, you touched on the fact that it's not one homogenous market, the housing market. What impact are you expecting then on prices of houses, of units generally?
I think the impact, as I mentioned previously, will vary depending on which location individuals are located within. So even in the last 12 months, we've seen such different performance across capital city markets. Some have moved in excess of 20%, while others have shifted less than 5% at the same time in the same conditions. So supply is one of the big factors that influences property markets. And there are some capital cities that are facing a structural undersupply with 30 to 40% listing volumes, or rather listing volumes 30 to 40% below the long-term average. And other markets, we're seeing listing volumes in line with long-term supply. So obviously, when you've got a structural undersupply in markets like Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide, Darwin, you're going to see that, you know, in a standard market where demand remains constant, you're going to see prices increase. Now, of course, these changes will impact on the demand side. But as an example, I'm based in Brisbane, and we have seen in the past for some properties more than 10 or 15 offers on a single asset. Now, in the last few weeks in the lead up to the budget, we have seen the number of offers decrease as well as the buyer volume. However, there's still more than one buyer for every property. So while we still have this structural imbalance between the number of properties available for sale and the number of buyers that are in the market, it's likely we're going to still see price pressure in those markets that are undersupplied.
Yeah, and that goes to the factor of supply and demand, as you say. Matt, when it comes to what these changes on negative gearing and capital gains tax will do to house prices, I mean, what do you think, particularly looking at the big cities and the difference between inner city, middle ring and outer suburbs?
I mean, I think it goes back to this point, right, that when we've got a real imbalance between supply and demand, and that's something we've particularly seen, I think, within some of the pricier suburbs in our major cities, but it's also something that's impacting, you know, growth areas of our cities in some places, particularly fast-growing cities like Perth and Brisbane that have seen a lot of growth in recent years. When you've got that imbalance, when you're pulling one investor out maybe of that sort of auction process, you've still got a lot of people people who are sitting in there behind that investor who can bid, you know, just a little bit below what they would have bid and who can then hold up that price. And I think that's why the price impacts that Treasury is modelling, the price impacts that we've modelled are pretty small, because we're really talking about a compositional shift rather than a fundamental change to the overall size of demand in the Australian housing market.
We know Angus Taylor, the opposition leader, has promised a $5 billion fund for housing infrastructure. It's something that the Coalition took to the last election as well. The government did have a $2 billion fund along similar lines in the budget. It says it's already put, I think, more than $4 billion into this area. Look, clearly Angus Taylor is saying he wants to do more on this infrastructure side of thing, the power, water, sewerage, road connections and so on that can get projects moving faster. He wants to link migration to housing completions as well to try and bring down migration numbers, the biggest cut, one of the biggest cuts in the nation's history, he says. Look, is it possible to say, Melinda, whether that is going to do a better job of dealing with supply in the market to get that supply of housing up?
I think it's a good start, because we definitely need to ensure that land that is available has the services completed to ensure that developers can actually complete the subdivisions and then start construction. The bigger issue that we face right now is that construction costs have escalated so rapidly off the back of COVID. We also see governments of all levels embed taxes and statutory charges within brand new properties. So, of course, that keeps prices elevated. And now we've got a lot of the investor incentives aligned to those new properties as well. Let's not forget that first home buyers are also incentivized to purchase those brand new properties as well through various grants and government incentives. So we've all of a sudden increased demand in the more affordable segment of the market in new dwellings as opposed to established dwellings. And you made the point earlier that there's going to be a change in the composition of buyers in some of the inner city locations. That is a very real risk that we face. And if we do see a higher concentration of owner-occupiers in inner and middle-ring locations where the established homes are largely located, that is what ultimately may result in upward pressure on rents as the rental supply actually diminishes over time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Matt, do you agree with that? I think Treasury says there'll be a minimal impact on rents, $2 a week, I think they were suggesting on average. But in the inner city and middle ring suburbs, could it be more?
I don't know that we're going to see, again, a particularly large impact on rents when the impact on this policy of supply is pretty limited. You know, we're talking about a housing market where at least the intention is to build more than 200,000 homes per year, and we might get close to that depending upon what happens with construction prices and interest rates over the coming couple of years. So, you know, a 10 or so thousand homes over a couple of years is not necessarily going to really swing that impact, swing that balance, I think, too much. Either way. I think the bigger point to be made here really is around when it comes to the coalition policy of funding, you know, those kind of enabling infrastructure projects. The real question is, are they kind of additional? Can we target them to places that actually need them rather than just, you know, disrupting activity that would already have happened anyway and being funded by states? And I think the bigger question as well is, are they going to adopt the same policy that the government has of saying that to participate in these kinds of funds, states actually need to engage in the kinds of reforms that we really need to see to enable more land to be built on for housing? And that's something that happens in our inner cities, but it's also something that matters in our growth areas where there are those infrastructure coordination challenges, and money helps with solving some of those challenges, but it's by far not the only problem. So yeah, we need to look at the problem more holistically.
Yeah,
I think it's
an important point, and we haven't really gone to and don't have time to go to what the states can and should be doing when it comes to things like stamp duties, land release and approvals for these projects that are really going to fix the real estate issues in Australia. But let me ask you both finally, coming back to what the government's put on the table this week, because these changes are very real, they're happening now. Are they going to help the people the government says they want to help here, and that is younger Australians who feel they've been locked out of the market? Melinda, will what they've done make that difference?
For some, the answer might be yes, but for many others, I believe the answer would be no, for the reasons outlined earlier. Depending on where people live and property values in those immediate locations, some people will find themselves locked out of the market where they work and where their family exists simply because they don't have the capacity to be purchasing their first home in those areas due to affordability issues more than anything else. And they can no longer rely on strategies like rent vesting, where they purchase a more affordable asset elsewhere to build up that equity position to later circle that back into purchasing their own home. So I guess the answer depends on the location and the property values in that location and how affordable it is for those first home buyers to be purchasing.
I mean, I guess they can still rent vest a newly built property, but what's your point there that there's just not that much available?
Look, I think that long-term, when we look at the capital growth opportunity on brand-new properties versus established properties, there's definitely a trend whereby established properties, whereby you're actually paying more for the land up front and less for the depreciating part of the asset, which is the building, that all flips and reverses with brand-new properties. So quite often we find that if people need to sell quickly after purchasing brand-new, they can be in a negative equity position because the asset or the building component depreciates at a faster rate than the land around it appreciates. So there are risks associated with purchasing brand new that investors especially must be factoring in before they pivot entirely on a tax change or a policy change relating to tax. When it comes to property investing, fundamentals matter more than the tax position. And I think that that's an important differentiation that people must realise before they pivot and immediately, you know, target or chase the tax benefits.
No, I think that's a really interesting point. And Matt, final word to you then. It's the same question. Will this budget deliver what's on the tin for those who are being told you've been locked out of the market for too long, now you'll get a crack? What do you think?
Well, certainly when we look at, you know, who are the types of Australians who've benefited from these tax concessions over a number of years now, they are disproportionately older and wealthier Australians. And so I think that does, just in a tax equity sense, create opportunity for younger people that wasn't there previously. And, you know, I note what Melinda was saying around rent vesting, but ultimately the biggest group of people who are negatively gearing when it comes to investment properties are those older and wealthier Australians rather than younger Australians. So on net, I think that does have a real impact on their housing potential. I guess it comes back to, can the government also deliver on supply and on those policies that help out with renters who really at the moment probably haven't seen as much in the way of government support, but who are probably doing it the toughest on this really tricky housing market at the moment?
Well, it is going to be fascinating to see how all of this plays out. And you've both helped me better understand the complexity of the housing market and all the moving pieces and how they come together. Melinda Jennison and Matt Bowes, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
We'll have more on this on Sunday morning. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, will be my guest on Insiders at the end of a big budget week. So I hope you can join us for that. And PK will be back in the podcast feed on Monday. Bye for now.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.